the funny thing is, if somebody's really wanting to try to see what you're doing, all they have to do is turn their phone on and create their own hotspot and call it free Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And people will connect to it.
They don't have any. They just go, oh, that doesn't require a password. Bloop.
Yeah, free Wi-Fi. Yeah. Ooh.
You're listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, where HIPAA and humor collide to make learning fun. Your delightful hosts are Donna Grindle and David Sims. Relax, HIPAA help is on the way.
Welcome to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast. My name is David Sims of HIPAA for MSPs, and joining me is my co-host, Donna Grindle of Card and Compliance. Hey, Donna.
Hello, David.
Are you missing me yet?
There are some things I'm missing, but I can't think of them right now.
Oh, that was so fun though, spending that week at Hymns. It was a good times had by all.
I know, it was awesome.
In today's podcast, we're going to be talking about mobile access policies and what all that entails. And that's kind of one of those things that people seem to forget about. But before we dive into that, let's go over some news things we need to speak of. First of all, being our boot camp. So you've asked for it, and we made it happen. People wanted a HIPAA boot camp, and we made that happen. So coming up May the 11th and 12th, 2017, we have our first two-day intensive HIPAA boot camp. What you think about that, Donna?
I think it's going to be fun, at least for me too. And you.
Yeah, it is. It's going to be a lot of great information, and I've taken a look at all the stuff that you've outlined, and I'm like, can we do that in 2 days?
It'll be hard, but, you know, that's, people want it, you know, they say, how fast can you do it? Everybody's urgent, you know, got to do this now. Well, we're going to see how that feels.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's going to be, you know, like I said, intensive.
Yeah.
And there's not going to be a lot of downtime. We'll have some homework things to do, and there'll be some breakout sessions and things like that, but it's really taken what we've typically taught in like an 8-week class, and we've condensed it down into a 2-week course, or 2-day course rather.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's no break in between. You better come with a, you know, bright and ready to learn brain needs to be rested and ready to take it on, because we're fast, but we are also going to be cognizant of how much information there is. And so we've built in these, you know, little ways to take, okay, that's a topic. Now let's take a little bitty break, you know, but you get to spend 2 full days with us. Yay. So There you go. It's Thursday and Friday, May 11th and 12th.
Mm-hmm. Very good. And so if you are very interested in this, and you should be, then you can go over to helpmewithhipaa.com/bootcamp to get more information, find out how you can register to attend. All right, so that's the information on the boot camp. Now tell us about some speaking gigs that you got coming up.
Gigs. I'm gigging.
Gigs. Are you gigging? You frogging?
Gigging? I'm frog gigging. Yeah. Yeah, so I just recently was in Alpharetta with a nice big group at North Fulton MGMA. Shout out to all you guys several people came up and said, give me that card about the podcast. Tell me how I can listen. So now they're all, I think I'm going to start billing my speaking engagements, maybe put it on my bio, because I've had this same comment now multiple times that I'm either going to scare you or make you laugh, but one way or the other, you're going to wet your pants. So, yeah, Donna Grindle's here. We're going to wet our pants. But it's a horror story comedy hour.
good to know for those coming to the boot camp. May want to bring a change of clothes.
I'm doing my job. I'm scaring you and making you laugh about it. But my next gig is the first week of April, April 6th, 7th. I'm going down there on the 6th. So I'll be in Orlando in April 7th at the Southern Oncology Association of Practices spring meeting. I know. Yeah. I'm really excited about it, though. It's a little bit of a, you know, different kind of setup. So it's not your normal convention schedule and or a conference schedule. So I'm looking forward to that. And then I come back in April, and there's some potential other things I'm going to do in April, but those aren't locked in yet. And then May the 2nd, I'll be in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I'm the keynote on May the 2nd. I'll be the keynote speaker for the Georgia MGMA Annual Conference.
And, love how Georgia comes to South Carolina.
Hey, it's just across the state line. Look, it's just, you know, if you're in your own town, it's hard to get people to want to go, you know.
That's because you don't want to do certain things in your own backyard.
That's right. You know, that's what a conference is all about, is not being where you can be seen, you know. But then in June, you know, I've got, so that's May, and then we got the... June is the South Georgia MGMA group, where I'm speaking at their meeting in Valdosta, Georgia. And then in July, we've got the Atlanta Association of Legal Administrators. So that's going to be fun. I'm going to go and work with the folks that are in charge of running, you know, legal firms and stuff. So that'll be fun.
Sounds like it.
Yeah. Boy. It's a little something every month. I'm bored. in between, I do nothing. So
I know. I know exactly.
Except talk to you.
That's the highlight of your day, week, month, year. Yeah.
Keep trying.
I could go on and on and on. Yeah. Of all the joys I bring to your life.
Oh, I'm glad you're aware of them.
I do give you purpose, that's for sure.
All right, yeah. Let's get down to business. I don't even want to go into this one any further.
All right, so we're going to talk about HIPAA mobile access policy. And I don't know about you, but this seems to be something that tends to get overlooked. When I go into an office and, you know, we go through all these things, and I say, well, what about your mobile devices? And I go, what about them? how do you use them? And then during the conversation, you find out that they either have PHI on them, which makes me want to bang my head against the wall, or they access PHI from them. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you also find out that some of the employees do that, and they're not monitoring anything. They have no way to, you know, make sure that the devices are secured, or, you know, have access to remotely wipe them in case they're lost or stolen. I mean, just all kind of things get opened up in this Pandora box.
Yeah, it you know, one of the things we learned, because we, like you, we'll go in and say, what about your mobile devices? And we have a questionnaire where we ask people, you know, it's a form we send out to everybody and say, well, tell me where you access PHI. And we're asking them all these questions. And we learned a long time ago, you can ask the same question two different ways and get two different answers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was once we learned that, we got much better data. And we'll say things like, do you access PHI via mobile device? No. And then three or four questions later, do you access PHI using an iPad? Yes. So, you know, it's just the way people think about it and see it, which is why you've got to ask, you know, we tell them right up front now, look, we're going to ask you this, what may seem like the same question over and over, but there's a reason for it. So we want to make sure we ask the question in the way that it triggers the information from you. So,
yeah, you know, they say if you want better answers, you got to ask better questions.
You know, it just depends on the person. So you just go with what you got, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You can't make them answer questions they don't understand. So
that's true.
You know, and that's part of it. I mean, do you have teleworkers? Do you have remote access? Do you have mobile access? Do you have home workers? Do your vendors connect? That's one they always forget. And technically, mm-hmm. that's the same as, you know, the mobile access policy. Those fall under that as far as I'm concerned. You know, it doesn't matter where you are. You're just not here. So And hopefully you're not just sitting at the coffee shop on the public Wi-Fi either. But that's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah. You know, and you know, the funny thing is that we joke about a lot of this stuff only because we've seen it. It's like the commercial for, was it Farmers Insurance or whatever?
Yeah, yeah. We've covered it.
We covered it because we've seen it.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I like some of those are really great. I love the deer in the swimming pool party. there's some really awesome ones. But, you know, when you're going through your policies and procedures, and we talked about policy and procedure templates, and recently we've been talking about them a lot. Everybody wants us to just give them, here, tell me, give me these policies and procedures so that I can just put them in my book and I'm done. And you, this is a prime example of why we can't do that.
Mm-hmm.
Because we tell people, do you know there's tons of things in your policies and procedures that you got a template 4 years ago that you're not doing? So it'll say in your investigation, even though they had a policy, they weren't following it. Well, right. I'm not going to perpetuate that and make it keep going. So this, you know, we've never really in a podcast talked about the kinds of things, but you should have a mobile access policy. You need to have one.
Mm-hmm.
So these are the kinds of things that you should consider. And, you know, when we do help people with the policies and procedures, we don't just, you know, do it for them. They answer a bunch of questions, but they don't know they're actually filling out a procedure. You know, again, it's, you know, if I say write your procedure, nothing. But if I say, how do you let people sign in? Got it. Here's what we do.
Yeah.
And so that's how we take that approach now. But these are the kinds of questions that you need to be able to address in your policies and your risk analysis. You need to be able to say, this is how we're going to handle it. So what kind of controls do you need to have in place? And you got to have controls on your local network, knowing those people are coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And then controls to allow those people in and what you're going to let them do.
Right.
So you've got to think through a lot of things, and not all of it is technical, because the technical people can't set things up unless you tell them what you want people to be able to do or not do.
Right.
So these are the kind of things, and you can involve your technical people in what capabilities you have built in and what capabilities you might have to, you know, add or get the technology to make it all available and make it work on your network. But here are the things that came to mind with me on what resources you would allow somebody to access remotely. Now, keep in mind, if you're using cloud vendors, you've also got to address how you want those accessed. Because everybody's like, well, I don't need a mobile access policy. I do everything in the cloud.
Okay.
I go into a coffee shop and I'm a nervous wreck. I'm just saying, you know, looking around, wondering what everybody's doing. I'm like, stop it.
I'm just trying to figure out who the hacker is in the group.
I know. Isn't it fun? Just
somebody's packet sniffing everybody.
Get a cup of coffee, sit there and watch, see who really is interested in what everybody else is doing.
Yeah, and they're always facing away so that you can't see their screen.
Yeah, it's to the wall, in the corner.
Yeah.
Yes, and we'll get to that, the how you can do, because we use public Wi-Fi in a special way. And we were doing that at Hims everywhere. It's like, oh crap, my VPN dropped. Disconnect everything, you know. But you know, it requires some knowledge. It's not like something that you can just say, oh, everybody can do remote access.
I know, golly, that's crazy.
Yeah.
So the first thing that we have here on our list to consider about, you know, what resources may be accessed is email. Boy, can we have a whole thing on that.
I know. Well, we've talked repeatedly about how email's not secure. Really, it's not. And, you know, there's that whole concept that people don't realize when they're doing email that, you know, everything's in there. There's a mm-hmm. reason that they hack your email. They can become you. They can send things out as you, and you don't even know it. They can pluck things out and use it for spear phishing. Oh, it's like a treasure trove for spear phishing.
Yeah.
So you do have to worry about securing it. And when you're accessing them on the phone or from a remote workstation, what things do you usually worry about there, Big Dave?
Well, I'll give you an example of an email thing that happened this week. I had a client call me and said, I can't get connected to my email. Can you help me? So I said, sure. And he proceeded to go to Gmail and log in. And I said, what are you doing? He said, I'm checking my email. And come to find out, the client had apparently their hosting provider for their website convinced them to move to Gmail, which I'm a fan of Gmail. I'm not a fan of somebody not telling their IT company that they just moved from one way they're doing email to another way they're doing email.
Because the web guy said do it.
Yes. You know, and so now it's like, okay, have we reflected this in our policy and the procedure that now we're doing email differently? And now you have given, because before the workers didn't have access to email outside of the building. Well, now they do. And the guy that called me said, I don't like this new Gmail thing. So I want to know, how can I forward all my email to my home computer, to my personal email account? How can I forward everything to my personal email account? And oh my gosh, you know, I had the conversation with him about how that's a big no-no. But his response left me thinking, he doesn't care what I just told him.
Uh-huh.
But now I've got to circle back around with the client, you know, and sit down with him and go, look, you've made changes here and people apparently don't know how to use it. They don't like it. They're trying to figure out how to circumvent it. They're wanting to forward their emails to their personal. You've got a mess. You better get this under control quickly.
That's why you don't just implement things, you know? You actually plan them out and know how you're going to do things. And I don't know who I'm would blame more. I think I blame the web guy more. Yeah, because the clients just did what they told them to do without thinking it through or getting any advice. I think I would ask to speak to the web guy. If how are you?
Yeah, I know, but this goes back to the complaint I have. And I know it's because I'm an IT guy, but doing anything around IT without involving at least a conversation with your IT company is ludicrous.
Yeah, I agree. You know. And we do encourage that. I just want you to know, I do tell people to talk to their IT provider if there's something I suggest that they do. And I even, if I know the IT folks, I let them know. And when you look at email, that alone, that example alone shows how complicated it can be if you decide to change anything. But on the flip side of that, a lot of times you do need to change things.
Mm-hmm.
Because I run into places where they're using an old Exchange server in their office.
Yeah, I think them moving to Gmail was a great choice. It's just that they didn't implement that in a way that was easy for the staff to figure out. And mm-hmm. plus, they didn't get me involved in it. So now they don't have anything in place to do encryption. So they're not doing encrypted email. We haven't covered, you know, the functionality of how they're going to do things and the logistics around that. So I love their own Gmail. But they could have done this in a way that works a lot better.
Oh, yeah. Great idea. Poor implementation.
There you go.
So when you're looking at, and one of the big reasons may have been, I want to be able to access it remotely. Often that is the reason people switch from whatever they're doing to another one, is they're limited, if at all, capable of remote access into their email with their phones and those kind of things. So you've got to define, what do we do today? Does it require a change for us to be able to access it remotely? And what devices are we going to allow to do that? Because are you going to let everybody who has an Office email account access it on whatever phone they have? I mean, we've talked before about these mobile devices. How many things have we seen recently about devices that are shipped with malware?
Mm-hmm.
And that there's one we just saw that's like major Android vendors. It was just this week that major Android vendors had malware in there and no one knew it. They're finding it. So it's clearly a thing that you have to spend some time figuring out. And I can assure you, you know, what device is going to be important. And it doesn't matter any of these other things that I'm going to allow them access to. And you take it a step further, not only am I going to allow them access to email, am I going to let them access documents? I mean, spreadsheets with patient data in it, or letters to patients, or any of those things that are stored on the network data area. We're going to let them access the practice management system or the EHR. Those two alone. And sometimes you only have access to one and not the other. And that's great, but you got to think that through thoroughly, because access to the EHR, when you think about how widespread that needs to be versus access to the practice management system, which can be, you know, a totally different mindset of people. They're going to be the home workers more than the remote. I'm on my phone, and I actually have a client that has now converted EHRs, and they're rolling out the ability to access it via their iPad, and the doctors are all excited that they can go to the kids' baseball game and access records sitting right there, you know, in the stands. And she's the practice manager's like, Donna, I'm going to need you to come by and meet with these doctors, make sure they understand. So that's another piece of rolling out your mobile device policies is, you know, not only is what devices I'm going to let you use, but also what training must you have in order to be able to do it? Because you got to know how to do it.
And we talked earlier about mobile devices being your iPads or phones or whatever, but some people don't realize that your laptop or your employee's laptop is also a mobile device.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, you talked about EHR. When you ask the question of the practice manager or the owner of the practice and you say, you know, where is your PHI coming and going and all that, that what they don't know and don't realize is that there's somebody who's bringing their own laptop in and connected to the network, or they're, you know, saving the data to it. Maybe they're uploading documents to their own laptop or taking screenshots of EHR stuff because they're going to work on it from home.
Oh, God.
I mean, I've seen all these things. I'm not making this stuff up.
I have to.
And so this employee's now walking out of the practice with all this stuff on an unencrypted laptop that the practice doesn't even know they're using, or maybe they do know they're using it, but have no way of knowing how they should address it.
Well, or you have, and this is a, it may or may not have happened to one of my clients. You have an employee who is really eager to, they decide that they come up with this thing and they decide this is going to make them look good. Okay, so I'm going to do this. I'm going to take the initiative. Not a bad thing, but because I'm not going to, let's say, confer with anybody about what I'm doing. And they'd been trained, but I mean, just like it's documented, they went through training just weeks before doing this. They took screenshots and then sent them to their home email account so that they could do a manual on their own.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
You know, and you don't, there's no way to know that that's what they did. So it's the people yet again. But now, you know, you think about, well, I didn't give them the ability to access stuff from home, but I also didn't say, you know, they said over and over, you can't email PHI. Well, the kid says, well, this isn't PHI. I use the training accounts. Well, there's some training accounts built into their stuff, but there's a pop-up window laying on top of a list of patients that's like live data. You know, it's like you're not looking at the big picture. You're just focused on you, which is, you know, millennials. But someday we won't be able to give them this much trouble, I hope. But, you know, they don't see beyond what it is that they're looking at. They have that tunnel vision, but it's not their normal job. So it goes back to asking the questions. You've got to figure out, and we talked about this before, is you have to figure out what they're going to do and then try to teach them not to do that. Mm-hmm. You can't say, don't do this, and then assume that they'll apply that to all the different scenarios. You have to come up with real-world scenarios and say, here's what happens when you do this, and this is why you can't do it, so they can tie it to something they might actually do.
So let's talk about RDP.
Oh, no. You know, we did. We made a big statement about it a few weeks ago. But you go ahead and what's your experience with it, David?
Well, RDP is Remote Desktop Protocol. And for a long time, that was one of the only ways that you could connect, you know, remotely to a site. So if you were working from home or something like that, you could, what we call RDP or Remote Desktop or Remote Connect, through that protocol into your network, and that's the way you worked. And unless you were using some program like LogMeIn or VNC or something like that, that was really the only way you could do it. And it was a fairly easy, cost-effective way. And it, you know, plus it gave you the ability to have users having their own screens and all that. So there's a lot of advantages to it. However, in today's world, that is such an attacked area that having anybody using anything remotely connected to the RDP protocol is a bad idea, especially if you're going to use it, you know, in a public setting.
Maybe if you're using it internally and only internally, okay, first of all. But if you've got a IP address that you open up Remote Desktop Protocol and you point it to an IP address and you connect to the office, that means that's what hackers are doing, because that thing has been one security vulnerability after another. They've constantly found these things, and Microsoft just can't get them all fixed.
Yeah. And that brings us to our next thing about, you know, if you are going to do that, then there is a proper way to do it, and that's through the use of what's called a VPN or a virtual private network. Uh-huh. And, you know, this is where, if you think about it, let's say you're sitting at a coffee shop and your office is 100 miles away. If you connect with a VPN, you're creating a private tunnel between where you're at and where the end machine is. So all the traffic is going through its own little pipeline. So that's what a VPN will do for you. And as Donna talked about when we were in Florida together, we both have VPNs on everything. It's on my phone, it's on my laptop, it's on my Chromebook, it's on everything I have. Mm-hmm. So every time we went somewhere, even in the hotel room, you know, mm-hmm. connect through a VPN. I don't care where we're at, it's connect through a VPN. Mm-hmm. You know, you go to just about any coffee shop, and the funny thing is, if somebody's really wanting to try to see what you're doing, all they have to do is turn their phone on and create their own hotspot and call it free Wi-Fi.
Yeah.
And people will connect to it.
They don't have any. They just go, oh, that doesn't require a password. Bloop.
Yeah, free Wi-Fi. Yeah. Woo.
I have, you know, and I know you have this, where people come over with their phones and say, I'm trying to find the Wi-Fi. Which one should I connect to? And they show me the list and they, oh, that one doesn't have a password. Bloop. And I'm mm-hmm. like, hey.
Yeah.
You know.
Path of least resistance.
Yeah. So right away, you know, it's absolutely terrifying for people.
I know. It's funny. I actually done this one time just for fun. I created a Wi-Fi network in a building that we were in for a short period of time, and it wasn't secure, and I did it for on purpose. But I named it Hacker Network to see how many people would connect to it, just to have fun.
Just every now and then,
just have fun. Yeah. So what kind of devices are you going to allow to connect? I mean, that's one of the things we have to have people ask, right?
Yeah, I mean, there's a big thing, and you don't have to understand what this means, but you need to have a part of your policy where, you know, I know what we would recommend you do. I'm not going to tell you have to do it, but jailbreak phones, they basically override what the manufacturers put in place for security, mm-hmm. you know? And so all of the controls and all of those things that, oh, I have iPhone 6, I have iPhone 7, whatever, you can't assume that all of the functionality for security is in place, because they have basically bypassed all of that. so that they can do things to the phone. And a lot of geeky folks think that's cool.
Yeah, a lot of free stuff that you can get. You mm-hmm. have to do it, you know, with a jailbroken iOS device, or in the Android world, it's called rooted. So rooted. You root your device.
Yeah. Yeah.
which is an old Linux term. Mm-hmm. But so you'll root your device or you'll jailbreak your device, and that gives you the ability to install things that you shouldn't be able to do.
Right. And you need to, again, you don't have to understand how that works. You just need to understand those are the terms. And I would say in a medical environment especially, I would say, no, you're not allowed access unless you can sign something that says, you know, you can't use a rooted or jailbroken phone to do it.
Right.
So I don't, yeah.
And there's ways to know this type of thing. I mean, and we may get into it as we go on, but, you know, there's ways to monitor these things and have mobile device management type systems set up so that, you know, you can monitor and manage these things. But another thing that we're going to get to is dealing with computers that's used by family members. This one drives me nuts because, you know, I'll get a doctor come in and they'll tell me that they're having a problem with their laptop or their desktop or whatever. And you go look at it and it's like, there's Dora the Explorer on here. And there's links to, you know, some kind of game, multiplayer online game.
What is that, that's Minecraft on there. Or whatever they're all into?
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, oh, here's another thing that says click here to enter the deep web. What does that mean? I mean, I'm telling you, some of this stuff is crazy. And I'm like, please don't let your kids or your family members use these computers. They are for business.
Well, and, you know, that's another thing that I use this example when I'm trying to teach it. You know, I love all my clients, and I enjoy going to their locations. And there are pros and cons at every office, just like anything else. But when you walk into those pediatrician offices, you know, you don't, when you go to, you know, internal medicine and primary care, all that, it's not the same as when you go to a pediatrician's office, because everybody there's a kid, and you've got one room for six kids and one room for not sick kids that are just there, but you have to segment off those sick kids. But they're still walking through. And I'm like, I don't want to touch anything. You know, I don't want water. I don't want anything, because you just know, you can just, in my mind, I see the germs just flying around. And the thing is, you know, this cute little adorable kid with his nose running will come at you with a huge smile and his hands up in the air like, hey, how you doing? You can't resist them. They're adorable, which is kind of like the whole, the kid wants to play Dora Explorer and all that kind of stuff. But what you have to realize is that sick kid room is what the kids are doing to your computer. They are giving it those ugly germs. And it's like pollen going in the computer's nose when those kids are around.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
And I will let the kids do very specific things when I'm sitting with them. I mean, like right behind them. And you can go into this page, and I've opened up this browser. Do not open up another tab. You can go look at your email. You're not allowed, you know, it's like, and I've got them on a guest account. And so many other things. So they now just bring their own stuff. I don't want to use Aunt Donna's stuff. And they get on the guest network. They're not allowed on the business network.
Yes. See, I've got mine like at home, even at the office to a degree, but everything's segmented. So like my TV's on its own network, and, you know, my other stuff is on a different network, and my Wi-Fi's on a network. And it's just everything's different and segmented.
Mm-hmm. And segmentation is something that it's the only way we'll be able to protect things long term. But that's a whole nother story. That's one of the things we talk about at HIPAA for MSPs. but you know, it is real that if you're going to let your employees access things from home, and plenty of people work from home these days. I mean, I do, and I support tons of people that have worked from home. With the tech support company, and you have to have some rules, and mm-hmm. they have to sign off on some stuff, because, oh my gosh, as David says, And you certainly want to give them rules about you can't use a public computer. Don't be going to no library and using a computer unless it's an absolute necessity, because now I can't get the VPN on there. I can't get, and you don't know how many things, all the kids that get on those things. So it's a certain amount of rules on what devices can you use. Can you use your own device? Can you use, can I use a, here's a great one for you, David. Would you let someone that had an Android phone that was 4 years old connect to any of your local resources?
Yeah, absolutely not. Yeah. That's one of the reasons why I upgrade my phone so often, is because as soon as they say we no longer allow updates, it's gone.
Yeah. It's part of that. And that goes back to another thing. What specs are you going to allow on a laptop or a desktop at somebody's home? Mm-hmm. Are you going to let them connect with an XP computer?
No.
What about Linux, David? What about Linux? Let's say that the kid has set up Linux because that's more secure and all these kind of things. So what are you going to it can be more secure if you know what you're doing, but it's not what the rest of the world understands.
Yeah, it's going to, you know, honestly, Linux is one of those things where you better really know what you're doing. I mean, yes, Linux is, I think, just out of the box more secure than Windows or even iOS. No, it's not iOS. What is it now?
OS X. I mean,
OS X, okay. So I think out of the box it's more secure. However, knowing how to secure it and all that is a lot harder in most cases than most people don't understand how to do it. So, but in the same way that Windows and Macs are, you do have to make sure you keep everything patched and updated and all that. That's regardless of which operating system you use. And as a matter of fact, they found something in, I think, the Linux kernel not too long ago that was a vulnerability that had been out there for, I don't remember the exact length of time, but it was like 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, they just found it. For 10 years, it's been out there that it was a vulnerability that somebody could exploit to get into systems. And for 10 years, nobody knew about it. And so I don't care which one you're using. And I know there are people who are Windows fanboys and there are people who are Mac fanboys, and some people will only use Linux. I have a buddy that swears that Linux is the only operating system on the planet. Right. But it doesn't matter which one you use. They are all vulnerable to a degree.
Overconfidence is the enemy of a man, I'm telling you.
Yep, it is. I mean, you know, people designed this and people are flawed. So there's a problem somewhere, I guarantee you.
Well, we have to get the computer to write software, but would the computer leave in flaws on its own? That's there I go down a rabbit hole. So when it comes to your mobile device policy, clearly there is a lot to worry about. You can't just say, hey, so-and-so wants to access things on the mobile device, and David, will you set that up for me?
Mm-hmm. No.
You know, it's like that. You got to ask questions. You got to plan it out. And if you've already got people doing things, then this should be higher up priority for you, because you've basically said, here, everybody, mess with me.
Yeah. So, yeah, you have to ask yourself, you know, do we have a policy and a procedure that's going to cover people working from home? Mm-hmm. What about people working from hotels or other public access type locations? What about working from other home networks, like when you're visiting other family members or business partners? I mean, all those things have to be covered in your policy if it's going on.
Yeah, it's like you have to know what you're going to do internally, protect your internal things, and what you're going to allow them access to remotely. Then you're going to have to define how they can access things remotely, including, you know, the VPNs and all of that kind of stuff. And then the devices themselves, what you're going to allow them to do. So if I'm going to use my personal device, I've got to commit to having up-to-date software. I'm going to have to, be able to ask you to let me maybe even put mobile device management on there. You know, and then everybody thinks you're, tracking them. Well, that's part of the whole thing. I can wipe it remotely and make sure that it's up to date. But there's a lot of things, and people need to sign something and be trained. Please do that too.
training is definitely the key. And we talk about it all the time, but it's certainly the key. And with the mobile device management, you can do things and you can allow things to happen. You can not allow things to happen on their device. You can, I mean, there's a lot you can do with it, but that has to be your policy. And if you've got, you know, if I'm the employee and I'm bringing my device in and now you're telling me I've got to allow you to do all these things to my device, I mean, am I going to really want that to happen? You have to determine that, or maybe, maybe you want to provide the mobile device to the employees so that you have full control and access over everything. And they can't even bring their own devices in.
Well, and you provide that device and you tell them what they're allowed to do with that device.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to show up and it's got 1,000 apps on it that you don't know what they are, that they've all, you know, oh, download this, download that. So let me have mobile device management controls.
Right. That's exactly right. With a mobile device management, you know, you can put policies in place that doesn't allow them to just install whatever they want to install. And, you know, should they install something, you would get some type of notification. So, you know, it's definitely a big plus for things like that. So what should your staff do to make sure they're eligible for remote access to happen? You know, we've mentioned one thing several times. Well, let's mention it again. Training.
Training. Yeah. They have to show me they understand that this is not, you know, it's like we've said before, the computer that people walk around with in their hand that also makes phone calls, it has more processing power than what we use to send somebody to the moon. So they have to understand the severity of what could happen, you know, that they're doing. And training, there's never enough. There's never enough when it comes to security, so.
No, and then the other thing that to think about is your device commitments.
Yes. you should.
And then how are you going to commit to your device? So, and then we covered that a few minutes ago. I thought Donald was going to have something else to say on it, but no, I guess not. We'll move right along. So then the other thing is the auditing piece. You know, how are you going to audit those mobile devices so that you can make sure your employees are following the policies and procedures you put out for them?
And to make sure they have up-to-date software.
Okay, I'm glad you finally joined the game.
You know, you do it to me all the time. It was an opportunity.
So anyway, we've talked about all those things and the update software stuff and all that. And we'll have some pretty nice resources that we didn't actually cover on our page. So if you go to helpmewithhipaa.com and look for this podcast episode, we're going to give you some example policies that some people have put out, and also some other teleworking type paperwork you can take a look at and see what other people are doing about that.
Yeah, there's so many things, and we'll put some links. There's some bigger organizations have it readily available online, so you can search for like teleworking policy or mobile access HIPAA policy, and you know, we're going to put a few links to those out there so that you can get some ideas, and it's always, you know, free to take somebody else's.
Yeah, I mean,
they put it out there.
Yeah, but when you read it, it gives you some idea, like, right. Oh, wow, I didn't think about that, or, you know, this is an issue for them that maybe I should take a look at it. So,
yeah,
good stuff. So that's our show for today, folks. I want to thank you for listening, and don't forget to head on over to helpmewithhipaa.com where you can get all these resources that we talked about, and don't forget to also go to helpmewithhipaa.com/bootcamp.
And helpmewithhipaa.com/survey.
Yes. So you can take our survey. You can get information about the boot camp, all that stuff on the website, helpmewithhipaa.com. Make sure you also go over to iTunes, give us a review. You can also share us out on social media, and we appreciate those of you who do that religiously. We love it. Keep on bringing it. So just remember, for Donna and myself, HIPAA is not about compliance. It's about patient care.
You've been listening to the Help Me with HIPAA podcast, hosted by Donna Grendel and David Sims, the show created to help you with HIPAA. For more information or to ask us a question, visit our website at helpmewithhipaa.com. Neither Donna Grendel or David Sims are attorneys, and they do not offer binding legal advice concerning regulatory compliance. The information in this podcast should not be relied upon or construed as legal advice in any way. Consult your attorney for legal advice concerning compliance with HIPAA regulations.